Welcome, everybody, to the best meeting of the month, the Active Transportation Committee meeting. Glad to see you all here. The time is 9:45, and today is August 12th. So, welcome. We need to have a roll call. Rosie, are you going to do a roll call? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll turn the time over to Rosie to do that.
Okay, so we are now recording. In order to do the roll call, I'm going to have to mute everyone. And if you can remain muted, that way it doesn't change the order of the participants, because for the roll call, I'm going to go ahead and read all the participant names. Let's see here. Alex Roy, Becca with Salt Lake City, Ben Hewitt, Bill Harrit, Brett McKiff, and I'm sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, Christy Dahlberg, Chris Lee, Emily Guffin, Emily Sang, Geoff, Ginger, Hannah Hutchinson, Heidi, Hugh Van Wagenen, Jared Stewart, Mayor Joe Sloblum, Jory Joner, Carrie Witt, Kayla Kincaid, Kim Clausing, Lanice Davenport, Laura Hansen with UTA, Mac, Drzyich. Mark Bradley, Mayor Dirk Burton, Mercedes Maestas, Nicole Proles, Norm Searle, Sarah Hudson, Scott Shea, Steph Tomlin, Stephen Cal, Ted Knowlton, Troy's iPhone, Zach Covington, Zachary Smallwood with Murray City. And if your last name is not on that list, if you can please type your entire name on the chat. And if you just joined and your name wasn't called, if you can also please type your name on the chat for the record. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Rosie. You did a great job. Those are some tough names, so. So our first item is to approve the minutes from June 10th. Are there any comments or questions on the minutes? If there are none, then I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes. And please state your name when you make a motion.
I move to approve, Mayor Dirk Burton.
Second, Mayor Walker.
Thank you, Mayor Walker. Okay, any further comments? Then we'll, all in favor say aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, then the minutes pass unanimously with no changes, thank you. All right, I have on my chair report, and I had a screen shot of this ability study that we're doing on a and I just wanted to show you because visuals are always better. Can everyone see that? Okay, I'll take that as a yes.
Yes.
So This has been really exciting, and it's been going on for the past year in South Weber. You can see South Weber is to the south of Interstate 84, which runs across your screen from left to right. And then US 89 is going north and south on the right end of your screen. And US 84 or I-84 goes up Weber Canyon, just to give you an idea of where this is at. But we've had Horrocks Engineering doing a feasibility study for a trail here in South Weber. And the cool thing is that we have been the missing link to a major trail network for years. And this you know, this trail is going to fix all of that. We've got the Weber River Trail, which is at the very left side of your screen, just ends at South Weber. And then the Bonneville Shoreline on the right side of your screen runs along the mountainside there. It's not hooked between the north and the south side. This trail will serve to hook to that as well. So this is really cool, and we're actually going to be finalizing this study next week, and super excited. So well, I just want to thank Wasatch Front Regional Council, because we applied for their TLC grant, and that is how we were able to do this study. And I'd also like to thank UDOT, because they are helping us by constructing the box culvert that will go under US 89, and they're going to be constructing that. Thank you. They'll be constructing that next summer, and we hope to be constructing our trail at the same time. So it's pretty exciting. I'm really excited about that, and just wanted to share that with everybody. And I believe that Mayor Walker has something to share as well, and so I will turn the time over to him.
Well, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great, thank you. I just wanted to just take just a quick minute and let everyone know, if they didn't know, about the great trail connection that we were able to accomplish a couple weeks ago between Lehigh City and Draper, Utah. I think Hugh's got that map up there where that red dot is. If you're familiar with this area, our trail, our Porter Rockwell Trail, has gone out to where that red dot is, and it's been completed to that point for, oh, I bet almost 10 years. It's been a long time. And so Lehigh's been working on making the final connection and bringing it around, as you see the Hugh driving the arrow all the way down. And it stops on the road that the Purple's office building is on, and Cabela's is down there below. So that trail connection, we were able to do a ribbon cutting on it a couple weeks ago, and it was a great event. If you're a cyclist and you've ridden, you know, you've tried to Draper to really taken your life in your hands every single time you've done it, because the road has no shoulder, and it's covered in large giant, you know, gravel haul trucks for, unless it's a Sunday morning, it's I think it's about as treacherous a road as you could possibly ride on. I've done it a time or two and thought to myself every time I was stupid to do it. But this connection now allows people to get all the way really safely to the Murdoch Canal Trail. Now, there isn't a direct trail connection yet, but where this trail ends in Lehigh, it's a quick jaunt over into a neighborhood, and you're up on a safe road that has a shoulder down the hill, and you can cross safely and get on the Murdoch Canal Trail, or go to the east or west and head over to the Jordan River Trail down into Lehigh. So it's an amazing connection. You can see that plaque. You go back to that plaque. We all our cities jointly mounted this plaque in the middle. It's right on the county line. And so it's kind of cool to see. Lehigh's been a great partner with us in connecting trails. This trail's a big, big deal in my mind, because it allows real safe egress back and forth between the counties. There's a lot of employers along this trail at the ends. Like I said, it ends in Lehigh where Purple's office building is, but Purple is right next to at the other end on our side is the brand new Pluralsight campus. So I hope this becomes not only a recreational trail, but an active commuter highway for people that want to bike to work, that may live in our respective Draper and Lehigh in our cities, or even maybe further down if you're ambitious. So we're really excited about it. We also have a major dirt trail that we're connecting between ourselves and Lehigh for the mountain biking community, which is going to be really an amazing view trail. But this paved trail, it's been a long time coming. I'm really excited about it. We had a great crowd. People rode out to it. You can see in the photos, we did joke that we should have set the ribbon cutting up on the Utah County side, so we wouldn't have to wear our masks and such great restriction. But, you know, we did it on our side, so you can tell we wore masks when we were supposed to, and it was a great event. A lot of people came, and I've had a lot of comments. I saw Hugh like 2 days later. He took a bunch of UDOT folks out on the trail and showed it to them. So if you haven't done it, been out on it, or if you've gone to the end and wished it was connected, it is. So anyway, thank you. We're really excited about it. We look forward to, you know, more future connections to the Murdoch Trail and as things go across that Alpine Highway at some point. So anyway, huge progress. We did the ribbon cutting on the very same day that Sandy and White City and Salt Lake County did another ribbon cutting kind of at the other end of that canal trail, where they have a 333-foot steel bridge that crosses the Dimpledale Ravine. And if you haven't been on that, you need to go check that out. That's awesome too. So anyway, a lot of great things happening in our south end on the east side, and we're excited about it.
That is great to hear. Thank you, Mayor Walker, for that report. That's exciting. I can't wait to get down and try that trail. So thank you. I think with the pandemic that everyone's realizing just how important active transportation is becoming to our communities. So I think it's great. We're all moving forward on that. We're going to open it up now for public comment. And so anyone who wants to say anything, please state your name and your organization.
Dave Iltis, Cycling Utah. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can hear you, Dave. Thanks.
Just wanted to update people on Immigration Canyon. We worked really hard to, with Immigration Township and a coordinated advocacy campaign to, the Immigration Canyon's getting mostly repaved at this point. And we encouraged them to switch from 12-foot traffic lanes to 11-foot traffic lanes in order to make room for more bike lanes and or shoulders. And we were successful in that. The Immigration Township Council voted to go to 11-foot lanes. But sadly, the contractor and or I'm not sure if it's the contractor and engineering team or both messed up the striping and pushed the center line of the striping about a foot to a foot and a half to the north. So instead of having 6-foot bike lanes going up and 5-foot bike lanes going down, there are 7-foot bike lanes going up and 4-foot to 3.5-foot bike lanes going down. They're debating as to whether to fix this or not. But this is apparently the fourth most popular recreational route in the country, not just in the state of Utah, but the country. Probably the most popular one in the state of Utah. And so it's incredibly important for, you know, regional recreational cycling. And I just bringing this up because for, you know, future recreational routes, such as the route to Saltaire in Salt Lake City, and I'm sure many other routes in Utah County and Salt Lake County, it would be great if this group and the members of this group paid attention to recreational routes in addition to those of active transportation, because they really are one and the same. And if you have any influence on Salt Lake County's process, it would be great to see them redo the striping here to give proper, to make the lanes properly apportioned. And in addition, that will actually help save the roadway too. So, because when the crown of the road is exposed and not on the stripe, it wears faster. So anyway, that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the update. Is there other public comment?
Sorry, Kim with Twill County.
Kim. Okay, Kim.
Last Saturday, we had an appropriate, I work for the health department, so we had an appropriate ribbon cutting, and it was for an underpass on State Route 138 connecting the north and the south side of Stansbury Park area. So it connects a 27-acre park to the lakeside. I've been working on that project, am I allowed to say, since 2014. So I don't give up. I don't know if anybody can see the picture behind me, but
yes.
So it's part of the network. And also, David mentioned, you know, something to the Great Salt Air, and we'd like something from Tooele County going that way. So I'll work on that as well. So, you know, how do you eat an elephant, you know, a piece at a time. So I'm trying to do that. So we've got great things ahead. We've been working with UDOT. We're grateful for UDOT. We're working with national parks. We're working with the BLM. And so great stuff ahead.
Great. Thank you, Kim. Anything else?
Mayor, this is Tim Harpst. I'm with Horrocks Engineers.
Okay.
I wear another hat, and that's being planning commissioner in Emigration Canyon Township. I wanted to add a little bit to what Dave just said. We heard that there have been some striping mishaps in the canyon. There's more than what I think Dave just said. Some of it's related to turn lanes and some of the other striping. The township community council is requesting that the municipal services district send a representative to their meeting next Tuesday to talk about this and inform everyone what's going on. I plan to attend that. That will be held Tuesday at 7 p.m. at the fire station in the canyon. So Dave, if you have interest in that, what you might want to do is check online for their agenda and see if they were successful in getting a representative there. I've reviewed their striping plans as a planning commissioner and made some recommendations that they've incorporated. And I actually warned them that they really needed to make it, be very careful when they put down that striping, because it's difficult to change once you get that down. So hopefully we'll find out what the extent of that issue is and what they can do about it.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate that. Any other public comment? Okay, hearing none, we will move. We're going to skip to Utah Leads Together, the economic recovery through AT investment. Teresa, we have Teresa Foxley here, and so we'll turn the time over to her now.
Well, thank you so much, Mayor, for the invitation to join you, and thanks to Andrew and the group at Wasatch Front Regional Council. It's great to see a number of friendly faces on the phone. And Mayor Walker, certainly enjoyed spending some time in your beautiful community, mountain biking on some of Draper's trails recently. It was really the last time I felt like a kid in the last 5 months. So thanks for your investment there. It really makes a huge difference in all of our quality of life. Andrew and Hugh have asked me to just provide a quick update on Utah Leads Together, where we've been, where we're going, some of the investment opportunities that were set forth in Utah Leads Together Volume 4, the most recent version of the plan, or the most recent volume of the plan, and to talk about why outdoor recreation and outdoor and active transportation projects were included as suggestions by the committee. And then to talk a little bit maybe about why an organization like EDC Utah, a corporate recruitment economic development group, cares about it. So I'm sure many of you know this, so hope it's not a sophomoric overview, but the Utah Leads Together volumes have been published by the Economic Response Task Force that was convened by Governor Herbert at the outset of the pandemic. There have been a number of partners involved in this effort. But much credit goes to Natalie Gochner with the Kemp C. Gardner Institute, Kristen Cox at the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, Rich Saunders at the Department of Health, and various other partners. But if you'll recall, the first volume of the Utah Leads Together plan was to really set forth our expected economic phases, the urgent phase, the stabilization phase, and the recovery phase. And so hoping to give individuals within the state a little bit of a time box sense for what they could expect. The second volume of Utah Leads Together was the color-coded health guidance. So this sort of economic and health restrictions that would be in place as the state moved through the pandemic. And then the third, as we continue to learn about the way that this virus interacts and moves, we became very acutely aware that there are high-risk populations that are extra vulnerable to the virus. And we've realized that the virus has had unfortunate and very outsized negative impacts on our multicultural communities, with them bearing a very unfair portion of the brunt, both in terms of health outcomes. For example, our Hispanic communities make up 14% of the state's population, but are today responsible for 37% of the cases. A lot of them also are in fields where social distancing is not professions or careers where social distancing isn't available, or in impacted industries like retail, construction, and hospitality. And so we had volume three really addressed how to manage some of these high-risk populations and efforts that we could undertake to help close some of these health and economic disparities. Then volume four, which is really the crux of what we're here to talk about today, was our economic recovery plan that was also broken out and time-boxed into three different timelines. The first was the 100-day plan, second, a 250-day plan, and then finally a 500-day plan that was ongoing for our recovery and really what we've been calling recover to better. So happy to report that the 100-day plan is well in process. There have been a number of programs utilizing CARES Act funding to help stimulate and support the economy that are under the In Utah brand. So this is an In Utah family of programs, and you've probably seen some of this if you've been out and about, but the Shop In Utah program, this was $35 million to impacted businesses that offered discounts to customers. Started out as a $25 million program. It was supplemented with $10 million of additional funding from the Commercial Rental Assistance Program. And happy to report from what I've heard, there are a number of outdoor recreation companies that have taken advantage of this program. In order to do so, they had to have demonstrated a loss of revenue and they need to provide discounts to their customers. So keep an eye out for Shop In Utah. Take a look at your local outfitters to see if you might be able to try something new through this Shop In Utah program and help support some of our local small businesses. We know, of course, that consumer confidence is going to be key to our recovery. And so this In Utah program is also designed to help bolster consumer confidence. And it really connects health outcomes with our economic outcomes as they're inextricably linked. We also know, though, that people started to, after the elective procedures were put on hold, it gave some in our community sense of fear of seeking preventative health treatment. We're trying to encourage folks to continue to go and vaccinate their kids, have their cancer screens, and to really actually go back to the doctor's office for preventative care. There's a Safe In Utah program, which is a $5 million grant program that was set up for companies to become what I call COVID compliant. Companies can seek up to $100 per FTE for purchases that they've made to make their space more COVID compliant as they bring employees back into the office or as they bring customers back into their shops. So this can be used to reimburse purchases of masks, sanitizing equipment, engineering controls, and other physical elements that might help a company, again, bring back employees or customers safely. And then finally, recognizing, of course, that there are impacted individuals whose jobs just may never return. This Learn and Work in Utah program, which is a $9 million grant made available to institutions of higher ed, both degree granting and technical colleges, for retraining impacted individuals in high demand fields. So major credit to our partners at the governor's office for putting together in relatively short order almost $60 million worth of grant program that's getting out into our community and into our economy. The next part of Utah Leads Together Volume 4 was this 250-day plan that also included investments in human and physical capital. I'm not going to do a deep dive into the workforce development programs, but we will talk a lot about today the suggestion that the Economic Response Task Force made to evaluate using some of the state's debt capacity to build infrastructure. Of course, the rationale here was the immediate stimulative effect on that construction projects can have in our community with great multiplier effects, and also the purchase of goods locally to help build these projects. Of course, there's an immediate stimulative effect, but also infrastructure investments have such long-term positive benefits in our community. And so it's a triple or even double bottom line, or even triple bottom line, if we can improve also quality of life and air quality while we're at it. So I would say the question of whether or not to bond is still very much a big question. These are some of the most complicated decisions that our elected leaders have to make, as it has a significant impact on the state's finances and also on their ability to program out into the future. And so I would say, you know, as far as I've understand, there is support by the business community to do this. The business community wants to see the state of Utah go all in, but there are a number of policy and political decisions to be worked out. So it's still a big if. But the task force made suggestions around 5 or 6 different types of infrastructure investments that we think would, again, have both the short-term and long-term benefit. And those were transit, water projects, broadband being super important. As we all, I'm looking around, I'm seeing a lot of beautiful home offices in the background here, but we're all, you know, many of us are teleworking, telelearning, or using telemedicine. But again, inequities have been exposed through this, and we know that there is not equal access to broadband and high-speed internet throughout the state. Housing, that was an idea that was that's been promulgated by a few members of the task force. And then finally, the thing that we're most interested here today, transportation, including active transportation. The 500-day plan had 10 big investment opportunities, many of which involve infrastructure, but those need to be fleshed out more, and we expect in maybe future volumes of the plan or transition plans of the gubernatorial candidates that we'll see more there. But why active transportation? So great question, Hugh, and great question, Andrew, but really there was already an interest in making investments in active transportation prior to COVID-19. So just a quick reminder that the Speaker of the House have been working closely with the tourism industry and our outdoor recreation partners on enhancing outdoor recreation assets long before any of us had ever heard of the coronavirus and COVID-19. He created the Outdoor Adventure Commission. This was getting some great traction. It's been, of course, sidelined until we can, until there's a little bit more economic recovery. But just a reminder that state leaders have been thinking about ways to invest in outdoor recreation, outdoor transportation before COVID-19. But I don't need to tell you, there's been a huge increase in active transportation with this bike renaissance and sort of a return to what I've seen some in the media call a return to the 1950s style recreational activities, camping, spending time in our parks, pulling RVs, and definitely being on bikes. My family's been participating in it. My husband restored an old mountain bike. I took the clips off of my road bike and put flat pedals on them so that I could ride around our neighborhood with my 3.5-year-old who we're hoping we'll learn how to pedal bike before the end of the summer. So I've really enjoyed seeing Hugh present on these matters in a few different forums. I'm sure you've all heard his presentation with the numbers. So we don't need to go deep into it, but certainly all of us are experiencing this bike renaissance in our own way. And we've seen this adoption of e-bikes and this move from, you know, sort of really serious, hardcore recreationalists to people who are using bikes now for more everyday transport for their transportation needs. So why does EDC Utah care about this? So for those of you, many of you are partners, organizations to us, many of you invest in EDC Utah. I would just share that when I started in economic development, now going on over a decade ago, quality of life really rarely factored into site selection decisions. But this has slowly and steadily shifted over the years to the point that most site selection decisions include some element where EDC Utah is asked to provide research to quantify the qualitative. So we've taken a number of steps organizationally to position the state in this regard, where we have research on arts in Utah, entertainment activities and other things designed to capture our advantages in these areas. And we know that as we compete against other markets that are becoming more costly, issues of housing affordability, mobility challenges, we're oftentimes seen as an attractive next market because we have some sort of competitive advantage or relative advantage there. So when EDC Utah stakeholders were surveyed on their perception of the top threats to our market over the next couple of years, they included quality of life factors like air quality, mobility, employee health. So really, we do see these investments in active transportation as being beneficial to some of our corporate recruitment site selection decisions, and certainly a brand enhancement to EDC Utah as we position us as an attractive place for talented individuals to live in and those who enjoy outdoor recreation. And I suspect we'll see some permanent societal shifts after COVID-19, the work from anywhere experiment. There will be some staying power there. And so having these lifestyle amenities will be hugely important to our state's continued economic success. So I'm happy to take a couple of questions here. Don't want to delay you guys from your agenda, but those are a few thoughts that we have on why the task force included active recreation, active transportation as part of our recommendations, and hope that state leaders continue to evaluate this very seriously.
Thank you so much, Teresa. I would like to open it for comment for just a minute if we have any questions. I just appreciate all you're doing, the steps you're taking to stimulating the recovery of our economy. And I think it's great that you're thinking about other factors as well, as like environmental and other things. I think we're going to come out of this pandemic stronger than we were before, and more prepared for the future. And appreciate you making quality of life a priority also, and involving active transportation in what you're doing. So thank you so much. Are there any other comments for Teresa?
I see a question in the chat from Dave asking where we can see the task force recommendations. I'll drop a link in. Oh, Hugh's already beat me to it.
There it is. All right.
Mayor, this is Andrew. Can I make a comment here, please?
You may.
Thanks. So first, Teresa, thanks so much for joining us and for all the work that you and EDCU have been doing on coronavirus response and more broadly on quality of life in our community. I just a few observations. One is, it's interesting, Teresa, how you described how years ago, when looking at business recruitment and business development, the analysis was a narrower, more sort of traditional business issues, and now quality of life is being looked at. I think that's reflective sort of a sea change that's happened in our state. That's reflected in how we think about not just business recruitment and development, but also how we think about investment, particularly in transportation. And this is the group, all of you, are the ones that know and have been committed to the fact that we have to have a balanced transportation system where we have good options for people to drive and take transit and use active transportation. So we all know that. And one of the issues that as a committee we've identified is that we need to accelerate the investment in active transportation, additional funding. And so what I think is exciting right now is the conversation around Utah Leads Together 4, and the investment recommendations. And then as Teresa noted, the discussions around potential additional state funding through bonding or other sources for active transportation represents something that we have been talking about and moving towards, but perhaps a significant acceleration of that progress as an outgrowth of coronavirus and the pandemic and the huge uptick in utilization of biking and walking in our neighborhoods. I'll note that through so much of the work that many of you have done, and I'll give particular shout outs to Heidi and the team at UDOT and Jim Price at MAG and Hugh and the team here working with all of you in the communities in the public sector and the private sector and community to say, what are those projects? What are those critical active transportation, regionally significant investments that we need to make to make biking and walking just as viable a means of transportation as driving or taking transit for more and more people. And I feel like, man, we are heading in that direction. I see Kim noting Tooele County. I mean, it's like, it's for our whole region, right? There's this opportunity that exists. And the exciting thing right now, again, on the potential for bonding, Teresa said, you know, are we going to bond? There's a lot of discussion about that for transportation. I think there's a question of whether we bond, yes or no. And I would say that the likelihood is yes, that it's going to happen, in part because the needs are there to deal with the growth in our communities, in our population, and also because the interest rates are at absurdly low levels. And the state's total debt load, Treasurer David Damshin was reporting in the past few days that the state's debt load has really come down to much more manageable levels, meaning that there is an economic opportunity for the state to use debt financing to accelerate investment. So then the next question is, when does that happen? There was some talk that it would happen, actually be authorized by the legislature this month in the special session. I do not think that's going to happen. The latest discussion seems to be that it is not likely to happen now. It might be in a subsequent special session later in the fall, or maybe in the next year's general session. But so we'll see how that evolves. But then for purposes of this group, then the question is, what gets bonded for? And this is maybe my final point. We are seeing, I think, a general acceptance, not just among bike advocates, not just among, you know, mayors and community leaders and advocates, but also among leadership at the state legislature and the governor's office now, that if there is going to be significant additional investment in transportation from the state, that it should be multimodal, that it should be roadway investment and transit and active transportation. That is the discussion that that is happening and has been happening. And I just want to note that that is a big deal, that that's where we are at in the conversations right now in Utah. And I'm going to say to all of you, nice work, because that discussion would not be happening were it not for people like you and groups like this coming together and articulating the benefits and demonstrating the demands to make those kinds of investments. So I will just say, keep it up, keep up the work, keep working together. And I think that we're going to continue to see that work paying off with legislative activities, the business community like Teresa, local government, and then great community leaders like all of you. So I guess that wasn't really a question. It was more of a monologue. But thank you, Mayor, and thanks, Teresa.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate that. Any other comments or questions for Teresa? Okay, hearing none, thank you so much, Teresa, for coming and sharing with us. We appreciate your time and know that you have an advocate here in active transportation.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. All right, let's move to Alex Roy. We're going to have him talk to us about the TLC and TIP fall application process.
Hi, thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen then, so one sec. Are you able to see that all right?
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Mayor. Hi, everyone. I'm Alex Roy with the Wasatch Front Regional Council Community and Economic Development Group, and I'm here to talk very briefly about some funding programs for the next fiscal year and some upcoming dates that you might want to be aware of, and also highlight some of the work that the TLC program is doing in the realm of active transportation. And, you know, there's a lot of mayors here that have been part of this, but part of what we're also wanting to talk about today is kind of like, okay, if you have a active transportation plan, what is your next step? And Mayor Joe did a great job of highlighting one of the next steps we see is kind of looking into specific routes. So I'll get started. Let's see. Okay, WFRC has six funding programs, the TLC funding program, the federal funding programs that are STP, Surface Transportation Program, Congestion Mitigation Air Quality, Transportation Alternatives Programs, The Wasatch Front Economic Development District has a number of different funding availability, and then the Community Development Block Grant Program. I'm not going to hit on all these today. These are presented at a number of different avenues, but there will be information on each one of these sent out in the packets later this summer. Quick note, all of these programs are competitive. And if you're interested in any of them, please feel free to reach out to me or Hugh, and we can arrange contact with the right point of person here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. So the program we're going to talk the most about is the TLC, Transportation and Land Use Connection Program. This is a joint funded program. Our funding partners are UDOT, UTA, Salt Lake County, and then ourselves. The TLC mission is to support local governments in their planning efforts, implementing the Wasatch Choice Vision. We've had over 80 projects funded through the TLC program, and we get about $1.6 million of annual funding. So that has been going up a little bit and might continue to go up, but we're getting, you know, bigger and better projects all the time, which is very exciting. The TLC program goals are really to maximize investment of public infrastructure. So if it's already tied to an existing trail network, like the mayor mentioned, connecting two different trail systems just by one little piece, they score really well. Enhance access to opportunities, increase travel options and optimize mobility, and create these communities that have a broad spectrum of the ability to live, work, and play. With this COVID-19, we've seen a lot of people, you know, more active walking around at night. And, you know, that's the kind of projects and ideas that we're trying to help communities tackle and improve, whether that's, you know, sidewalks or wayfinding or just, you know, improved parks, park cities of that nature. We're happy to meet you there. So TLC, its ultimate goal is to really meet the communities where they're most wanting their help. So whether that's, you know, a high level plan, a vision, you know, just kind of a general active transportation plan, you know, that's kind of on the very high end of what we can do. So that's kind of the plans in this little slide here. We can also help, you know, with more route determination, initial, you know, concept designs and stuff like that. And then we can get really specific in like something that Mayor Joe showed you earlier, really like getting into, okay, this is where we need a box culvert and things of that nature. So it can really run a spectrum. So if you're thinking about something particular or just want to get like a, you know, a better understanding of what your community wants, we're happy to help look at funding opportunities for any size scale project. So one of the bigger active transportation plans that TLC has been involved in the past year or two has been the Mid-Valley Active Transportation Plan. This is six cities, you can see them there, I won't read them all. But they're looking at, you know, a kind of a universe of active transportation opportunities and alternatives to kind of then come to a consensus between all six communities on like, okay, there's a lot of options out here, but these are the big ones that are both, you know, we should look at for interregional connections and, you know, really creating a strong backbone. There's always going to be opportunities to build off this backbone, but if we could, you know, determine whether 33rd or 39th should be our primary bike corridor, that's kind of what this is shooting to get to. I imagine that after this project wraps up, you know, in the winter, that we'll have a number of smaller projects that come out of it, looking at, you know, a little more individualized routes and the feasibility of them. But so this is pretty cool. You know, it's taking it from a really high level vision and developing it down to one level further from something like the County Active Transportation Plan that we saw a few years ago. This will include some design elements. So we'll be kind of focusing on the top two or three projects that are identified in this one, and then, you know, kind of taking them into concept development, concept design, so that the communities can start seeing, you know, kind of regional travel fleshed out a little bit more. I won't talk too much about this one because we've already hit on it, but this was happening in South Weber, you know, and it's kind of just looking at how to extend the Weber River Trailway to the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. I haven't been really involved, but it is a good example of, you know, we know kind of roughly what we want, but we want to identify how to get next steps. And we talked about this, but it's really cool kind of taking a bigger concept and then, you know, really putting details into it. So as far as where we are in the program funding timeline, we're here in August. So we're just kind of announcing some of these at various forums. That later in August, there'll be a packet of notice for letters of intent sent out to various communities. In September, the end of September, September 30th, letters of intent are due. This is a pretty light reach. So it's, just one form that we can then distribute among our various funding programs. It doesn't have to be real fleshed out, but it does have to be kind of a high level look at what you're wanting to do. And this helps us determine the eligibility of your program, or perhaps you apply to TLC, but you're really more of a federal funding program being more capital or something. We kind of work together to make sure that you're aware of what program you should be applying for when applications are due in December from this letter of intent. So it's an easy lift in September, but then the bigger applications due in December. And then we ultimately have project recommendations and awarded projects in spring of 2021 in this case. So with that, I'll leave it. If you want to find out about more information on any of the programs or the TLC programs or what we could possibly do to help you fund some active transportation projects in your area, feel free to reach out to me, Alex Roy, at AROY at WFRC, or any of these other contacts, and we'd be happy to talk with you and help you with your active transportation projects. So I can answer any questions if people would like to ask me, or we can move on.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate that. Honestly, I didn't know about all these opportunities until I was part of the Active Transportation Committee. And so there's so much out there and so many people ready to help us out with our active transportation. So I appreciate that. Are there any other questions for Alex?
Yeah, I had a question.
Hi, Chris.
Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, can you talk me through really quick how CDBG funds can potentially be used for active transportation?
Yeah. Well, I'm not the main community development block grant administrator, but I know that they can be used for low and moderate income areas to improve things like sidewalks and other things that you would consider in the active transportation realm. I think Christy here, if you have like specific questions, she'd be the best to reach out to you. I can send you her contact as well.
Well, thanks.
Okay.
This All right. is Burton with West Jordan. I can tell you
we Burton.
Funds for improving the handicap accesses for corners for sidewalks so people can get access that way. And that fits into the active transportation because that's people have access. So anyway, we do a lot of that with some of those funds. Just a suggestion.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Burton. Anything else?
Mayor, just yes. To the point about other funds and other assistance available in areas like Tooele County or Utah County, I just want to note that there are other resources. UDOT has resources that are available. MAG has resources that are available, funding programs, technical assistance, et cetera. One of the things that we are trying to do, when I say we, I mean WFRC, MAG, UDOT, UTA, all of the transportation agency partners, is we're all working together to make sure that if there's a local community that wants or needs help, that we can help facilitate you getting that help. So if you come to us at WFRC and you're looking for help and it's not something that we can do, but UDOT can or MAG can, then we'll know that and we'll facilitate getting you to the right place. So we're all working together towards the same goals, and we'll try to make it as streamlined and administratively simple as we possibly can.
Any other questions for Alex? Okay, thanks so much, Alex. Appreciate your presentation. All right, now we'll go to Heidi. She's going to talk to us about TIF Active and TTIF project awards.
Yeah, thanks. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Hopefully, it'll pop up for you guys. Are you seeing a presentation slide? Thumbs up from anyone? Perfect. Yeah, so I'm here today to talk about our TIF, our Transportation Investment Fund, and our TTIF, our Transit Transportation Investment Fund, active transportation projects that were recently funded by the Transportation Commission. My slide will advance. There we go. Advanced maybe just once. So this is the Transit Transportation Fund first and last mile improvements. And so if you look towards the bottom of this chart, the last two are active transportation projects that connect active transportation users to transit. And the first one is the pedestrian bridge in Provo that's located at 600 South and 100 West at the Provo Front Runner Station. The commission approved the funding request for $500,000 because Provo had additional in-kind matches. So they only requested this much from the commission. The other one is for a multi-purpose trail along Old Highway 91 from 4th West to the public transit system on 200 East. And so that financial commitment was $309,000 for a trail. So those are the TTIF funding projects that were approved by the commission. Additionally, if you'll look at this, the TIF projects that were funded, the majority of them are active transportation, everything on this list besides the first two. So we have the 600 to 700 North active transportation improvements from Salt Lake City. They came in at $2,400,000. We also have separated bike lanes on 300 West between 4th South and 21st South. This is another Salt Lake City project for $2.1 million. We also have multi-use pathways and ped bike amenities along Three Kings Road, Silver King Road, Thames Canyon Drive, Snow Peak Drive, and Payday Drive for $960,000. We have 1300 West improvements from 64th South to 4800 South. And then a BDO Phase 2 shared use path for $900,000 and a Provo Canyon Parkway gap for $6.1 million. So all of these projects will be kind of moving forward. They all have really significant 40% or more local matches. And so these were kind of the projects that the commission moved forward from the prioritization and the list that was generated and all of the projects that were submitted on behalf of local governments. I figured I'd just throw up quickly for those of you that maybe aren't familiar with the TIF active project. Basically, the process is that a project can be nominated by local government. We kind of go through a process to make sure that the project didn't just like evolve out of thin air, that it's been part of an actual plan and has some community involvement aspects behind it. So at UDOT, we've gone through and basically done a massive compilation of all of the plans that, are in existence in the state and kind of folded those into one solid map. So it's easily referenceable for us to kind of go through this process. One of the requirements for TIF and TTIF is that there's a demonstrated ability of these types of projects to mitigate traffic congestion. And there's also a commitment on behalf of local government to ensure that maintenance is taken care of for the project once it's built. So this includes winter maintenance, ongoing repairs, pavement improvements, those sorts of things. And then also the 40% match is one of the requirements for local government. And so once we kind of have all of those boxes checked and everything lined up, then the projects get ranked and prioritized and presented to the commission. And so I think I also have some of our TIF active models here and our TTIF first and last mile model. And there's a lot that goes into the prioritization. There's different rankings and weightings. And basically the modeling process is just a decision-making tool for the commission. And so it's kind of at their discretion which projects move forward and which ones, might have, more relevance in being funded through TIF and TTIF. So anyway, I'm happy to answer any other questions or comments.
Okay, thank you, Heidi. I saw you did environmental with funds from the TIF for roadways. That also, does that also include active transportation, trails and things? Do you provide funds for those through the TIF for environmental
Environmental studies?
Yeah.
I'm going to maybe have Ben step in. Ben is at UDOT and he's well versed in all of the questions. So go ahead, Ben.
That's a very great question. And one with the active transportation components being new to our process, that is something that has come up during our annual review on providing some clarity with respect to things like studies. So that's one thing we are looking at right now in our annual review for these processes, and we hope to provide clarification on that in the September, October timeframe as we do recommendations. But I think that's the goal is to try to have these similar to the highway process. So I'm hopeful that would be available and we'll be able to clarify that, but there's some additional discussion with the commission and within UDOT and stakeholders to clarify that. But it's a great point.
Thank you, Ben. I'm hopeful as well. And please add my plug to your meetings when that comes up. So thank you. Any other questions for Heidi on the TIF? Okay. Sorry, did you hear me?
Thanks so much.
Any other questions for Heidi?
There was a mandatory 7 seconds of silence. So thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you, Heidi. Appreciate you and your presentation. Excited about TIF being part of the, I think there's a wrap about that, but I'm not going to go into that now because Hugh, I don't know if he's practiced up on his beatboxing. So we'll move on. We have Jeff Ellis here with us to talk about trail maintenance and puncture vine removal. So Jeff, we'll turn the time over to you.
Thanks, Mayor. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm Jeff Ellis with the Trails Foundation of Northern Utah, formerly known as Weber Pathways. And for 8 years now, we've had a program to get rid of puncture vine, which, as you all know, is the plant that produces the goat heads that stick in bike tires. Each goat head is a seed capsule with 4 spikes arranged so that no matter how it lands on the pavement, there's always 1 spike pointing up, ready to puncture a tire. Not good for dog's paws either. So we've been focusing on certain trails in the Weber County area, and we've been very successful at eliminating puncture vine on these trails. So if someone tells you it can't be done, that's not true. We have done it. The plant itself is easy to kill. There's several over-the-counter herbicides that are very effective on it. The challenge with puncture vine is it's a growth pattern. It doesn't have just one crop a year like some weeds. It sprouts all through the summer, June through September. Whenever the weather is warm and you have some moisture in the soil, you get a new crop coming up. So people want to do a one and done, spray it once and get rid of it. That won't work. We found that the plant can go from a seed to a young plant to blooming to producing the goat heads in less than 4 weeks. It's really fast growing in the heat. So in order to get rid of it, you've got to go out there and spray every 2 weeks. And that's the challenge, is making that commitment, committing the staff and the time and energy to go out there and do that. Every 2 weeks, from about the beginning of June to the end of September. And the number of plants that you'll find is going to vary. You might go out to a site one time and there'd be 4,000 plants. You might go out 2 weeks later and there's only 100 plants. It just depends on the weather. If you have a combination of heat and moisture, that really sets them off. If it's extremely dry, then you don't get as many. The good news is it gets easier. If you can stick with it for 3 years, we've found that after 3 years, the population just crashes. And we've had places where we started out, there were probably 5 or 6,000 puncture vine plants, just carpeting everything. After 3 years, we'll find maybe 6 or 7 plants in a year. It's a dramatic improvement. So like I say, if you can focus on an area, if you can make the commitment, you can get rid of it. And I'd be glad to take any questions.
Thank you, Jeff. Are there any questions for Jeff?
Jeff, I have a question. This is Hugh. And in your program, are you mapping the areas out? And so you have a good idea of where they're all at, is one question. And then the second is, how is Trails Foundation, are you the ones applying the spray regularly? It's your teams going out, or do you partner with anybody? And what's roughly the cost of the commitment to stick with this over a number of years?
Well, as far as mapping goes, it's been kind of an informal process of me riding my bike around and seeing where the puncture vine is. We have board members and other partners who will report there's puncture vine growing in such and such a place. Once we've kind of mapped out where it is, then we decide, well, is it something we can take on? Our resources are limited, but we've worked with Riverdale City and Ogden City, and we've informed them when and where there's puncture vine to spray. The most effective thing has been Trails Foundation people going out there and just doing it rather than relaying it through several contacts. And what we've done, we don't have a truck to go down the trails and spray everything. And even if we did, we wouldn't treat it that way. We just use backpack sprayers and spot spray only the puncture vine itself. And as far as cost goes, it just depends on how big of an area you're working on. If it's a limited area, we'll probably end up spending about $2,000 this year.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Also, if you look in your chat, Dave has added a site you can go to help with tips on mitigation of those puncture vine weeds. So thank you for that, Dave. Any other questions? Okay, thanks so much.
Becca from Salt Lake City.
Hi, Becca.
And I've been working with the Parley's Trail Committee on Goatheads. They put together a website. Would it be okay if I screen shared for a minute?
You bet.
Sure.
Can get the right screen. Here we go. So they put together a website to ask people to adopt a trail segment. And we mapped out segments of the trail that are what I thought would be a reasonable dog walk, because I think it's better to identify and pull goat heads while you're walking your dog. And it's certainly very much a factor for bicyclists, but they also really hurt dog paws. So I think dog walkers are real potential allies. And then if you sign up to be one of our monitors, and the idea is that you monitor from like maybe about a half mile of trail, or actually a quarter mile. And so if you go both directions, then that's a half mile walk. So you can take your dog for a walk on your daily dog walk and monitor goat heads. But if you click on this report goat heads button, that takes you to this map that has been put together by Salt Lake City Public Lands. And although it is based in Salt Lake City, I don't think it's limited in its geography. So this could become a more regional tool pretty easily. And so you can add places that you have spotted goat heads. Oh, look, and here's one down here in, I don't know if that's Taylorsville. I'm not sure exactly where the city lines are down there. Oh, and here's one down here in either West Jordan or I'm not sure exactly. I don't know where the city lines are. Anyone further? Okay, just scrolling around looking. So you can see that all these little green patches here are along the Parley's Trail, and most of those are very minor infestations. So you can tell quickly by looking at this map, like the green ones, a plant or two. And then this is a place where we have like a whole block that is a carpet of goat heads. So we know that that's one of those places that you're gonna have to spend some real time. So I mentioned this in case this is helpful to anyone else, either to look at the resources that we put together in terms of trail segments being monitored, or if there's interest in taking this map and making it be maybe more of a regional resource. So if anyone wants to go pull goat heads, go to one of these red dots. Thank you.
Thank you, Becca.
I think that's a great idea. If we can get members of the public to learn to recognize the young plants and pull them out when there's only one or two, boy, that's the most efficient way to do it. And then we don't have to go out and spray.
Yeah, we have a little section on identifying goat heads. And there's a video that was put together by Salt Lake City staff. So there's some resources there in terms of like, can you recognize a goat head when it's a baby? Because that's the best time to pull them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, thank you, Becca, and thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you coming and presenting. And there's a few questions in the chat, but I think they're all getting answered. So if you don't have your question answered, please reach out to Hugh and make sure we get that answer for you. All right, now we'll turn the time over to Nicole for our active transportation map resources review.
Great, thank you, Mayor. So I'm so excited to share this with you guys. Let me just share my screen here. Oops. Okay, so as promised at the last Active Transportation Committee meeting, I was able to pull together this integrated map of all of the new active transportation data resources that have been put together over the last several months. So over the last several months, UDOT, AGRC, Wasatch Front Regional Council, MAG, and others have worked to compile and update the bike data sets that we have. And this is really important because we want to have statewide bike data set, regional and statewide bike data sets that are all on one system in a consistent schema so everyone can access and use them and have them available in an easy to find location, integrate them and store them in an established, well-known system. And so what we've been working on is getting them into the statewide Road Center Lines database and the statewide Trails and Pathways GIS database. I'm a little scattered this morning, I guess, but this is for the existing bike features that are currently built and open and ready for use, the planned bike features that are in local and regional active transportation plans, and those, you know, together make our future bike network. And then we have some other resources here that I'll share. But anyway, having this all together in one consistent system enables better inventory of our bike facilities, better and easier visualization for planners, for people that are putting the trails together, for our citizens, and communication, better communication of the existing and planned facilities, and especially for better analysis of our bike network's performance and how it's working for our residents, where there are gaps, where there could be improvements, all that sort of thing. So this is a great resource for existing, you know, knowing what's on the ground right now, and for planning our bike facilities and networks into the future. So the first, just to show you how to get to this map, if you go to our main website, wfrc.org, under maps and data, we have a brand new interactive map gallery. And you can also access that interactive map gallery at an easy to remember URL, maps.wfrc.org. So this is a nicer interface than we've had before, and all of our featured maps are going to be on this. So that's maps.wfrc.org. And the active transportation data resources map is right here in our new and featured maps. So you can click that and it'll bring you to this map that has all of the bike data sets. So this is just an intro tab with some information. And then the first tab is our existing bike features network. So when you first pull it up on your computer, give it a few minutes to load. There's a lot of data in this map, and based on how the server's working out faster, connection is, it might take a little bit to load all of these features, but it will work. Just give it a minute. And so these are for the region. These are all of the existing bike facilities on our road center lines. On the left tells you what type of facility it is. You can find your area of interest, zoom in, pan around, and you can click on any feature and it'll tell you what type of feature and what, you know, what street, what city, and the type of feature on the left and right side of the street. And that is for the whole region, including MAG right now, including the Utah County region. So the new rail trails we were talking about are on there. I also just made sure to add the new extension of the Sandy and White City Canal Trail. If it's not in there as existing right now, it will show up with the next roads update that should happen in the next couple of weeks. Our next tab is planned bike features. So this has all the planned bike facilities. For right now, this is just for the Wasatch Front, the WFRC region. We're working with Jim Price and Corey down at MAG to get the planned facilities in for the Utah County and MAG region as well. So keep an eye out for that. But this is, we have such great plans for AT facilities in the region. As you can see, there's a really good network planned here. These are all taken from local active transportation plans and regional plans, such as the ATIP, the countywide plan, and some of the combined plans, and also our RTP, our most recent 2019 RTP. So you can also explore any of those features just by clicking on them. It'll tell you what type of feature is planned there. And then our future bike network tab, this is existing and planned features. So it really gives you an idea of what our region could look like if all of our existing features, our bike features are maintained and our planned features are built. To see it really clearly, you have to zoom in a little bit more because there's so many features that they don't all load at once. But you can zoom into your area of interest. Anything you click on, it'll tell you if there is an existing feature, what type that is, and what the planned feature is there. Some of them will have two types, and so obviously there's an existing type, a regular bike lane, and there's also a planned upgrade to that, which is, it's supposed to be turned into a buffered bike lane in the future. So those are all on the road, GIS road center lines, and the trails and pathways GIS data sets, which I've linked. If you'd like to use the raw data, or anyone in your department or office needs the raw data, you can access and download it through these links right here on the left side. So then moving on to some of the other resources we put together, the bike demand is an upgraded or an updated calculation of the UCATS demand model for bike and ped scores. It's just sort of a better look at showing demand based on areas or like spots of interest, population, demographics, road design, that sort of thing. And so you can sort of see the whole region as a sort of a type of heat map looking design. But when you zoom into your region of interest or your neighborhood. You can click on any of these features. There, it's all by road segment, and it'll tell you what the composite or aggregated demand score is for bicycle or pedestrian, and then the information about the factors that went into that score, into that calculation. So those are all right in the pop-up. And there are some planned roads in there that are not current roads. So at the bottom, it'll tell you whether the road is planned or currently active. And there's some more information about what those factors in the breakdown mean over here on the left in the demand, in the methodology documentation. So feel free to utilize that. We also have network quality scores, so level of traffic stress for the region on major roads. This was originally put together by UDOT and just recalculated recently with all of the new bike feature data. So those also have pop-ups to tell you what the level of stress is, what type of bike feature there is, the number of through lanes, and the speed limit also went into this calculation. So that's a really good resource for looking for high comfort routes and potentially places that could use improvement on our bike network. And then lastly, I just put in here, I showed this map at the last meeting, the Wasatch Bike Plans map, but I just added that tab in on here as an additional resource. So it's all in one place. This tells us what cities have funded active transportation plans or completed active transportation plans and how the progress is going along the Wasatch Front with funding and adopting active transportation plans. This was the map that's in conjunction with Bike Utah. And so you can access more information about funded and completed AT plans from this map. And I think that's about all. This was a lot of work went into this map from our agency and UDOT, AGRC, MAG, and several other agencies around the region. So I just wanna thank everyone for all the hard work. And I think it's just so exciting that we now have all these resources available. These will be undergoing regular updates. So anytime a new AT plan is adopted, we'll get it into this data. Whenever we get information that a facility has been built, we will move that over to the existing facilities. So I plan on staying on top of this, but obviously it's a gargantuan effort to keep tabs on all of that stuff. So if you're exploring this data and you see something in the planned features that's been completed, let me know. Feel free, reach out. I can go in and fix it immediately, pretty much. Any support on keeping this up to date is much appreciated, because we just want it to be a really useful resource for everyone that would benefit from it. So happy to answer any questions now or later. My contact information, I will put it somewhere. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Just one question. Is that all the data you have? No, I'm just kidding.
No, we have so much data. We love it.
If you looked at the chat, you would see that there's a lot of excited people.
Yay!
And updates. We so appreciate that.
Good.
So thank you.
Are there any questions?
Any questions for Nicole?
This is Becca from Salt Lake City. I have a question. First, I want to say congratulations. I think this is the first time there's been a regional map that I think like took Salt Lake City's like really complicated, because we have so many different types of bikeways data, and like it looks right. So yay, I'm excited about that.
Me too, thank you.
And Nicole, I don't think I'm sharing my video, but we just made the same hand signal.
You just missed a what? I'm sorry.
We just made the same hand signal. I just did the same thing. I did the wave hands. Excited.
Yay.
The question I had is that in collaboration with Salt Lake County, we had put together a map that is a published map for the user that shows bicycle comfort level. And sometimes we have things that are not necessarily facilities, but that, you know, serve bicyclists. And sometimes it's reflected with a paved shoulder, and sometimes it's reflected with a bike lane. And so we just went for comfort level. And so you could see like, oh, my route is mostly green. It's all smooth sailing, except I have this one little section in my route that's going to be like a nail biter. And I'm just wondering if you would consider adding that as a possible resource to this map.
So yeah, sure. I think that would be really useful. I think the network quality measures were published first by UDOT as part of that multimodal network study that happened last year. And it was just sort of a region-wide thing. And, you know, we always want to do these analyses on a region-wide level, so it's available to everybody to use for their city. But yeah, we can get in touch with me. I'm happy to talk about it and learn more about it. Maybe that is something that we can incorporate into the network quality layer or have as a separate layer of its own.
Yeah, and it's also sometimes a question of like, okay, there's a bike lane on this road, but it's like 50 mile an hour traffic and there's, you know, three lanes of it. And that's not the same as a bike lane that's on, you know, a mellow two lane road with not much traffic. So,
right.
You know, it helps to get at that kind of question. I know as transportation planners and engineers, we all think in terms of like, what's the facility we can build? But this takes it from the perspective of the user experience.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's so important. So yeah, I'd love to collaborate on that to make sure that our, I think that the network quality measures are speaking to that in level of traffic stress, which basically translates to comfort of the facility. And so yeah, I think if we can sort of find a way to mesh those things together, that would be a great resource. Thanks.
All right, thank you. I just wanted to make, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Steph with UDOT. I just also wanted to comment, next up for UDOT is to we're about halfway through all the intersections in the entire state and identifying for each leg of the intersection what type of facility type is at the actual intersection. I just, like Becca, just what you were describing really reminded me of, like, you know, there's often these pinch points that you get to when it's like you have a facility on the linear part of the roadway, but once you get to the intersection, you know, kind of everything breaks down. So it's been really interesting in compiling this data, because as you can imagine, intersection facility types are all over the map in terms of what they are, but I could imagine that being added to this as well, because that would be helpful. You could actually look in on an intersection level, not only intersection level, but leg of the intersection, and take a look at the facility type and whether it continues through an intersection in kind of a safe manner or not. So just wanted to make that note that that's being worked on as well.
Awesome, thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you for all the comments. And thank you so much, Nicole. Appreciate that and everything you're doing to help with that. Great
thank
job.
Thank you so much. Yeah, feel free to reach out if anyone has any questions or needs help with how to use these resources or anything else. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. All right, real quickly, we're going to turn the time over to Hugh for RTP and AT amendments.
Thanks, Mara. I'll be brief. And what a great meeting. Thanks to everybody that's participated today. So much going on. It's an exciting time to be involved in this work. And to follow up on what Nicole is saying and keeping things up to date, we do our RTP every 4 years, but there's changes and new plans getting done. And so we're looking to do amendments to the active transportation section of the RTP regularly to help keep this data and our planning efforts coordinated and up to date. And Salt Lake City has put in a request, and this is something that goes to our regional growth committee, technical advisory committees, and then ultimately to the regional growth committee. And providing this information for you today as information, just so you know sort of what we're up to in keeping our plans up to date. And so with Salt Lake City, you can see now with the picture on the screen, this is the existing regional transportation plan. Salt Lake City is outlined in the purplish color there. And they put in a request for a number of facilities to get updated into the regional transportation plan. And so just to give you a feeling for what that looks like when these requests come through, all these yellow lines now here, sort of spanning the city, and these additional dots, like Steph was talking about, intersection or point projects that improve the connectivity from facility to facility or through intersections. And so these are the things that we're looking at to get adopted here in the next little bit. And just to go back to the Wasatch Bike Plan, we're working with communities that have recently completed these plans. So West Jordan, South Jordan, West Valley, North Salt Lake, Bountiful, Centerville, to get their plans also updated into the RTP. And then of course, all of the other cities that are in progress, we'll be working with them to get that done as well. So it's just a heads up, lots going on and we're excited by it. And if you have a question about your city, making sure the amendments get updated or new plans get updated, please reach out. Thank you.
Great, thank you so much, Hugh. Appreciate that. Do we have any program updates really quickly? Okay, then hearing none, is there any other business? Hugh, do we have anything else?
Yeah, thanks, Mary. I think that Jim Price sent me a text message and asked that it be shared that the Provo River Parkway gap that exists now between Deer Creek Reservoir and the existing Provo River Parkway is now fully funded over a number of years of funding getting put together. But the Regional Growth Committee down in MAG approved just over $4 million to meet the TIF active match that Heidi was talking about earlier to finally do complete the gap that's there, about 3 mile gap and $15 million project. So it's really exciting for that. And for those of you that are familiar with the Wasatch Loop, that's part of the Wasatch Loop program. So exciting things for UTEC County and MAG down there, again, with a lot of help from a lot of different partners and funding agencies. Thanks.
Great, thank you.
Mayor, can I jump in real quick?
You may, Jim.
Thank you. Hugh, thank you very much for that. I just wanted to say that we have put together a great coalition to get that project done. It's probably the toughest project I've ever worked on. We've been working on it since about 2002 with UDOT, with Wasatch County, with Utah County. It is a very expensive 3 mile piece of trail, $15 million. But it's because the canyon is so narrow and there's so many things going on in Provo Canyon. But this has been a long-term effort between a lot of different agencies, and we've all stuck with each other. And we've gotten to the point where we're very hopeful. We think we can get this thing built next year. So wish us luck.
That's great, Jim. Thank you. I haven't seen you sporting the whiskers before. That's very nice. He's good looking. Travis Olson is asking if all these presentations will be attached with the minutes. He's wondering, at least the ones with slides. So please let him know if that's the case. Okay, we can do it. Our next ATC meeting is October 14th at 9:45 a.m., and I believe it will be online again, correct, Hugh, or do we know?
More than likely. Don't know for sure, but we anticipate it to be so.
Did you want to quickly talk about the Golden Spoke virtual ride? Just explain it.
Yeah, thanks. That was it's an event coming up for those familiar with it. We normally do it in May, June, of course, got postponed, and we were looking to do it this fall, but the situation hasn't necessarily improved as far as mass gatherings. And so this year, Jordan River Commission has done a lot of work, UDOT, MAG, WFRC, and other partners. We're going to be doing the event virtually. So during the month of September, people have the opportunity to ride different portions of the trail, hashtag it, let us know. You can sign up, let us know you will be participating, receive a little gift for participation. And we're also highlighting trail connections to the main spoke network. So kind of a fun way to see where connections are and how big our network actually is for off-paved and off-street trails. So keep an eye out for that. We'll certainly send out an announcement via our newsletter and social media and email to this group for sure. And it should be a fun thing to do considering the circumstances. Thank you, Mayor.
Great. Thank you, Hugh. If there are no further comments, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, I've got Norm Searle. And Jory, was that you with a second? No? Do I have a second?
Mayor Walker, second.
Thank you. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right. You all have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you in October.
See you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Mayor.